Take it away, Bob.
Mr. Van Morrison.
Good choice. Good choice.
Blue-Eyed Soul. You got to love them.
It's a good song, and you had the book breakdown there. How did you come to this song selection today, Bob?
I had his album, Tupelo Honey, as a sophomore at the University of Michigan.
Okay.
Listen to that baby many times. You got to love Van.
You do. Well, so he's what year? 1971, it says there.
He's in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That induction ceremony used to be televised live from Cleveland, and that was great TV, but now it's on like Showtime or something, which I don't get.
Really? Did you watch it regularly?
Every year.
Up until when?
To 3-4 years ago.
Wow.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. Well, welcome everybody for another Packers podcast at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, jsonline.com. Bob, another week, a lot to get into, but first things first, NBA opening night was last night. I'm sure you were glued to the television. We got the Bucks on in the background here.
At the McGinn household.
At the McGinn household, right? I think I forced your hand there. Baseball. Good choice. So
the Bucks are battling with the Knicks in Gotham right to the bitter end, right?
Right there in Gotham. They're fighting with them. So why are you anti-NBA?
I guess I don't really understand the game anymore. That's really? Part of it.
That's part of it?
I mean, I was really into it through about 77, 78, and then I just lost it. I don't know.
Even when that song comes on?
So I follow college basketball, and when guys go in the NBA, I lose it. Lose them forever.
Really?
Yep.
This doesn't bring back any memories for you? Patrick Ewing?
No.
Hakeem Olajuwon? Sean Kemp? Gary Payton? Michael Jordan? Nothing.
Not really.
All right. Well,
I'm more Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, you know, Bill Sharman, who just passed away a week ago.
You want a good jump hook. A good 6-foot hook is what you're looking for. No 3-point line.
And Converse All-Stars, everybody's wearing them.
Yeah, you don't want ankle protection. No ankle braces in your NBA, right?
Right.
You want them out there in their sandals and their peach baskets. All right, what do we want to talk about today? We got to look back.
Yeah.
At the Vikings game, this is 4 in a row for the Packers, correct?
Yeah.
Pretty entertaining game. You wrote some good things about Aaron Rodgers the day of the game and your game story. I think it's worth kind of talking about that. We'll get into just the way this team's built again. I mean, we've talked about it in the past, but you know, writing about it a little bit this week and talking to guys, it's a little slice of early vindication for some of the decisions that the GM made back in March, really. We got to talk about Mike Daniels. I mean, here's the player who has made a jump in year two for Green Bay. They're really relying on to get a pass rush without Clay Matthews in there. We're going to break down the Chicago Bears. We're going to talk about the executive board, the executive committee for the Green Bay Packers, something that I know next to nothing about. I think that a lot of people, at least in my generation, don't know what these people do, really, and there are some changes there. And then we're going to take some questions on Twitter. There's a lot of good ones in there, so we'll try to get to as many as we can. But first things first, Bob, Green Bay, they go into the Metrodome one final time and kind of blow them out. It wasn't as close as the score indicated.
You know, I wrote in that little view that the Packers were catching the Vikings at the wrong time, and, of course, I was mocked for that after the – result was in hand.
You were mocked.
By a few emailers, yeah.
Ooh, what did they say to you?
Oh, you fool. Something to that effect.
Really?
You're such an idiot. Don't even write back. There's nothing you can say.
I appreciate
that, gentleman.
So he said, don't even write back?
Yeah. He said, there's nothing you can say. You're an idiot. It was a good one.
Good analysis. He really broke it down there for you,
and
Bob.
I'm sticking
by
it.
He really broke it down.
They were catching the Vikes at a bad time. And had Aaron Rodgers, after that opening kickoff, not come up with that 90-yard drive right off the bat,
right,
breaking the Viking backs and fans' momentum and all sorts of things, it might have been the wrong time.
I mean,
but they took care of them.
They did. I mean, look at the – really, I guess the two things that kind of stand out to me is that drive and then the drive right at the start of the second half. I mean, just statement drives, long drives, and they just converted so many third downs over the course of the game. They converted their first 7 third downs, I believe. Eddie Lacy, James Starks continue to run the ball well. And defensively, they were able to shut down Adrian Peterson. He wasn't a factor. I think he had 3 carries in the second half when they were out of the game. So, but it all starts with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, they can have pretty much any injury on this offense and just fill in those moving parts, adjust elsewhere with youth. As long as Aaron Rodgers is there, he's finding a way to make plays when they need plays to be made.
He ran well this week.
Right.
31 yards, I believe it was, season high. Tom Clemens said he kept putting him in favorable runs at the line of scrimmage. And he just, the noise, he's oblivious to that. They have that silent count working. They got no problem there. And he's winning with Boykin and Miles White and a new tight end in Corliss. And Green Bay was -7 starters in that game if you count Brian Bulaga. So I thought it was a tremendous victory for him.
What goes into a quarterback's reads at the line? I mean, Mike McCarthy has kind of in so many ways hinted to the fact that they're asking Aaron Rodgers to do different things, and one of those being making audibles in the run game at the line. I mean, and I think his whole career he's been looking in the secondary, breaking down coverages, and finding the mismatches that way. Now he's moving up a level there and been a factor in the Packers. It's one factor of many. I mean, the offensive line,
right?
The new running back, the communication between everybody, they've all talked about that. But I think one thing we haven't really talked about is Aaron Rodgers and his ability to help with the run game.
Yeah, he sees what the box looks like, you know, if it's 6 or 7 or what the D-line is doing. And he's guessing if they're going to be twisting or stunning or some kind of movement up front. He knows this from his film study. And then the linemen are smart enough that they can adjust 3-4 seconds left on the play clock. And he's changing runs left, right, inside zone, outside zone, you know. I don't know that they're – I wonder if they can change to a run, a power, or a counter, or a trap in which a lineman's pulling. That I don't know. It might be a little bit tough. But, yeah, the ground game was really tough against the Vikings.
How many times did you see linemen last year finish blocks the way that – the line is this year? I mean, Bakhtiari, there are a couple runs where he just buried a guy at the end of it. Evan Dietrich Smith getting to the second level on James Starks' touchdown, just pancakes Henderson. We didn't see it with this much regularity last year, too. I mean, the line is playing with that edge that they talk so much about.
Do you ever remember seeing it at left tackle and center last year?
No. I mean, you wrote about that after the season with Marshall Newhouse and Jeff Saturday.
That Saturday was a fine signing, wasn't he, Tyler?
Just a slice. Is that a slice of sarcasm? Boy, really botched that one.
It'd been better with James Campen out there. On one hamstring.
And to really stick with Saturday.
Or Larry McCarron, excuse me, Tyler.
Right, Larry McCarron. Frank Wooders.
Bring back him.
Might have been available.
Right.
But overall, Bob, another game where Green Bay is able to control things in the trenches. And they win again. I mean, they're playing Brandon Whedon, Christian Ponder. They got Josh McCown this week. So it's not like they're playing the Drew Breeses and Kaepernicks of the world, but they're winning when they have to win.
Right.
Final thoughts on the game? Well, let me ask you this.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I thought the Vikings were extremely emotional and ready to play, as I knew they would be.
Right.
You look at that first series, that 90-yard drive. It was 90, right? Eddie Lacy was 6 for 1 yard. I mean, they were spiking their ends, crashing them down. I mean, they beat Barkley inside. Dietrich Smith was knocked back by Gian, I believe, in that first series. To me, you can tell if a team's ready to play if that D-line is coming off the ball and smashing people. And they were smothering that run. It was extremely impressive. But, boy, when it got to third down and third and six, Rodgers was beating them every time, over and over and over again. How deflating, how crushing to a team, to a coaching staff, to a crowd. It was brutal.
What's going through Aaron Rodgers' mind when he sees the Vikings blitz on the long touchdown to Jordy Nelson?
Well, that's the first zone blitz they had in the entire game. And I think that was Alan Williams' second blitz in the game. It didn't even catch him off guard.
Yeah.
You think if you don't blitz till the third, that was in the third quarter?
Well, right. And it's automatic. It's just an automated response to a blitz.
He sees it and goes.
Yeah. You know, one other thing that kind of one final thought here is, you mentioned Eddie Lacy and the struggles with the run game early in this one. And you think back to the loss at Seattle or Indianapolis or so many times in the past where maybe the run game starts the way it did. how many times did the Packers just stray away from it, spread it out? McCarthy basically says, screw it, I'm just going to throw the ball around the yard. We're going to do what we do best. And sometimes it works, sometimes it backfires. But they really stuck with the run with Lacy, 29 carries. They mixed in James Starks. And I think that's just kind of exemplifies the change in culture that everybody's really talking about around
here. You know, they only had two plays of 20 yards or more. They scored 44 points with only two. I mean, I got all these notebooks, but I'd say a normal 44-point game, you probably have eight. They had two. It was all ball control, obviously, and the no punt, but it was a different kind of Packer offense, as you suggest.
You know, we don't get to really look back at your Sunday columns as much as we probably should on these podcasts, but you had a column about Aaron Rodgers, his ability to make plays on the move. What was your big takeaway with that?
You know, Tyler, you sit in the press box, we're up there together, and we have that high eye in the sky look, right? And you're down there, and we have to watch the ball to an extent, all right? So you're watching that ball, and you're way up high, and you see the pass rush coming on a drop back or a shotgun, then with three-step off a shotgun, and you see that, and then all of a sudden, either Favre or Rodgers breaks through the DT line, mm-hmm. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that QB, these people are so good, those two guys at throwing on the run accurately, both of them are. You break through that DT line, your odds of getting a gain of 20 yards or more, they go up like five times. And I've noticed this throughout all these years covering the team, that when you break through that line, it's over. The cornerbacks can't plaster that long. The guy's going to run for 10, 12 yards. It's just history. And so that was the genesis of the column, just something I've been thinking about for years. And then I just looked at some numbers. They haven't been that great at it this year, although he ran now in this game. Right. He ran more. Again, he didn't make a whole lot of pass plays on the run. The Vikings played coverage. And so, I mean, he's lethal on the move. Favre was as well.
Isn't it just backbreaking for a defense when you can spend a whole week putting in a game plan, putting in a strategy you think is going to work, the way you're going to cover these receivers, and you have maybe 2 or 3 seconds of a backyard football, a freelancing, a little bit of time that lets those receivers shake free, that lets Rodgers adjust on the run, and everything that you put the work in, it doesn't even, really even matter.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it was a great column. All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, one guy that we've talked about a few times on here that has really kind of made the jump to year two is Mike Daniels. Two sacks against the Vikings. He's been the most effective inside rusher, Bob. I mean, this is a team that, since Colin Jenkins left, they wanted Mike Neal to be an interior rusher, a guy up front that could get a little pressure. Ends up getting injured 2 or 3 times, moves to outside linebacker, has a new home. Jarrell Worthy, second-round pick. Dayton Jones, first-round pick. Granted, they wanted different things out of these guys, but in general, as far as a big guy who can get some pressure, who would have thought that it would be Mike Daniels, the fourth-round pick, who's 6 feet nothing, 302 pounds.
So, Tyler, how do you see, when you watch Daniels, how do you see Daniels winning in the pass rush?
Boy, it just seems like he has, the leverage. He's low. He just built low to the ground. And it's just hard for linemen to uproot him, to get underneath him, and to gain leverage at the point of contact. And he's quick. He's too quick. You saw the play on Charlie Johnson where he basically bench presses him, tosses him to the side, and closed on Christian Ponder like he was a Big Mac or what are they? They ate KFC in the locker room like he was KFC. And it was there's just not many guys built like him. I mean, looking across the league for that story a couple weeks ago, according to NFL rosters, and obviously these heights and weights, they're never official, but he's the second shortest defensive lineman in the NFL at 6'0". And he was explaining today in the locker room how, as a rookie, remember, he had the shoulder surgery in January of 2012, went through the, you know, combine pro day or different pre-draft workouts and actually bench pressed with this bad shoulder. He's kind of a maniac. Mm-hmm. But he never fully recovered from that. He said he had bad weight. He put on bad pounds. So it was a process. He had to shed the bad pounds, put on good weight, put on good strength. And it's taken a full year, year and a half. He even said, he goes, I'm really looking forward to next offseason when I'll have another full offseason to build the body that he wants. But you can see the strength. I mean, there's not many guys built like him with that kind of just strength. And I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of it's just relentlessness. AJ Hawk called him crazy today. He is just kind of a maniac. We both talked to him. He's probably one of the most colorful guys to talk to, full of energy. What do you say about Adrian Peterson last week? The only way to stop him is to kill him like a horse. Jeez. And somebody said, oh, you can't do that. That's against the rules. But yeah, he stepped up this year for the defense, and they need it. They just have to get pressure in different ways with Clay Matthews out, and he's a one factor.
And I made an error that I'm going to own up to. Well, I probably made a million that I don't know, but in the rating of the Packers Tuesday on Christian Ponder's 19-yard touchdown run, I said that Daniels and Dayton Jones blew lane integrity, and he ran it up the middle. A reader, a very bright reader, pointed out, and I went back in my notes, and he's dead right, that it was Josh Boyd with Dayton Jones on that play.
Is that
Daniels
right?
Was out.
Okay.
Yep. Sorry, Mike.
There you go. There's your apology.
Yep.
Speaking of Dayton Jones, one tackle through seven games. He had the penalty. Do they need to see more out of their first-round pick right
Absolutely.
Now?
You know?
Yeah.
He's just getting kind of knocked off on his pass rushes. He's on the ground a little bit. He's pretty quick off the ball. You see some good chase. I mean, he's a fast guy. How many jet rushes he's having where he can really just go either way and blow through, I'm not really sure. Sometimes they're in contain rushes or, you mm-hmm. know. And then if they blitz from the slot, I mean, anytime there's a slot blitz, you know those guys are going into predetermined gaps. I mean, their job is not really to get to the quarterback. Their job is to occupy and then let the slot guy come free.
Gotcha.
So when you see that, you know, don't blame Dayton Jones if he's not doing anything or if he's just kind of stalemated at the line. Different deal. So, yeah, but he's got to play better, and I'm sure he knows that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Kenny, yes.
He can, you know.
Sure.
So Dom Capers says Monday that he's still developing, that they're asking him to do some different things that maybe he's not used to, and maybe the example that you just laid out is one of those things. And Mike Daniels, the way he described it, asking him in the locker room today how he thinks Dayton Jones is playing, is that he says that he's really close, that he was in his position last year where there's so many times where he's maybe just a tick slow, reacting a half second, split second slow, and Dayton Jones really wanted a half sack on the one there against Minnesota, and he's close to a lot of those, it seems. But I guess the moral of the story is his gradual development hasn't really hurt the defense because Mike Daniels is playing the way he's playing. Fair?
Granted. Yep. Agree. And I think Jones is somewhat close. I think Mike's right. He knows what it's like, and I think that was a very telling comment. Yep.
Okay. All right, Bob. Well, you know, you look at this game, and I just kept – well, first of all, it was a night game,
mm-hmm.
so we have a chance to watch, to pay attention to some of the earlier games. And Steven Jackson coming back from his injury, I believe he had 6 yards on 11 carries. And my gosh, back in March, that was story du jour, every du jour. Fans wanted Steven Jackson. He was a player perceived to be a guy who could close the gap to San Francisco. Tough, rugged, everybody knows the history with Steven Jackson, what he did in St. Louis. Well, it's kind of been, hasn't worked out so well for him. In Atlanta, we see so many running backs when they hit 30 years old, as Steven Jackson did this year. They just kind of fall, their careers fall off a cliff. I mean, you can go down the list, Sean Alexander, Edgerrin James, way back 10, 15 years ago. It just happens again and again. Ted Thompson just stuck to his ways. They didn't sign Steven Jackson. They didn't sign Chris Canty. Marcus Spears, Michael Huff, two guys who were just released by Baltimore, I believe, today or
really?
This week.
I didn't hear that. Okay.
I think somebody tweeted that out at me.
Michael Huff.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Spears.
Again and again, they passed over these guys and just waited. I mean, they waited to the draft to add players. They relied on guys like Mike Daniels to take the next step. Eddie Lacy is their number one running back. There's a guy they're relying on. David Bakhtiari at left tackle has stepped up. Micah Hyde in the return game as another cornerback. They have more undrafted free agents. A lot of the guys last year, they expected to take a step, have taken a step. So I know it's too early to say everything that Ted Thompson did in March paid off. I mean, we can't make that conclusion until we're in the playoffs. But I think that those who doubted Thompson in the spring – What can you say now? I mean, some of the decisions he made appear to be paying off right now.
And you go back a year prior, after the signing of Saturday, people saluted it.
Right.
They loved the signing. They were getting this, right. You know.
That's so true.
This
That's
athletic so true. Guy who had been with Peyton Manning all those years. And Bill Polian said he's got, I know he's, well, he's right at the cusp but he of going downhill, but he thought he had one more good year. I'm sure Ted Thompson was stung by that signing.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the guy, you know, he should never have been, should never have played last year. He wasn't any good.
Yeah.
And so that colors the history colors it too.
So I mentioned the stat line that Jackson had to T.J. Lang right after the game, and he kind of smiled, took him by surprise, and he just said, quote, "In Ted we trust. As a player, you're never in a position to question what management does, and I think the whole draft and develop philosophy that we have here is obviously a formula for winning. As a player, it makes you feel good that you get the time to develop and give you that trust. You're here for a reason. They expect you to perform at a high level. Obviously, with the decisions he's making upstairs, you trust." And that was interesting. He said it's something that probably annoys the fans more than it does the players. But I said, well, I mean, come on. I mean, you're a player. You see these veterans that are available. You know what they could potentially bring. And he said, well, there's part of you that can't help but think that a guy like Jackson or somebody could help you out. But that's just not the philosophy. Everybody around here kind of accepts the fact that this is the way Ted Thompson does things. And right now, at least it seems that some of those decisions were the right ones for Green Bay.
Yep.
Any thoughts? I mean, you've been covering him since day one. I mean, I guess it doesn't surprise you that year in and year out, this is the way that things go.
Their roster looks, you know, real good right now. And, I mean, there's been some players over the years that, you know, have gone on, have signed with other teams, have gone on and helped clubs, you know. But that's just, as you say, that's just not the way they're going to do it. And, they, you know, they hit on Pickett, they hit on Woodson since then.
Mm-hmm.
There haven't been a whole lot of UFAs, have there?
There really have not.
Or trades or anything.
Not a lot of waiver pickups. It's just, let's see what we have. Let's promote a Miles White undrafted kid out of Louisiana Tech. Let's give Jared Boykin a chance to develop. He couldn't even get out of Jacksonville's rookie camp. It's pretty wild that this is, and it's working. It's working right now. So we'll see if it
Chris
continues.
Harper's a real anomaly. I mean, he's been failed in two places, you know.
That's true.
And the Packers took a shot at this guy. We'll see if he's going to be a three-time loser. Who knows, you know.
Yeah, interesting talking to him about what went wrong at those previous teams. And he kind of said that, you know, in San Francisco anyways, they wanted him to do different things. He just kind of wanted to be a wide receiver. So I think here in Green Bay, that's the plan. Strictly a wide receiver, even though he's a bigger guy, could maybe play in tight, do some different things. But
He's really big, Tyler.
He's
We're
a big guy.
In practice, just eyeballing him. I mean, he's huge. So I don't know if he can play wide out or not.
So what happens at wide receiver? I mean, they probably get James Jones back here soon.
This week, maybe?
Yeah.
Possible.
Probably. Jared Boykin stays on the field one way or another with the three wide receiver sets, right? With the way he's playing.
Well, then White is really more of a
slot guy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking, yeah.
And Nelson, Jones, and Boykin are not real slot guys. Nelson can't play anything, so can Jones. But I don't think we're going to say goodbye to White.
No.
I think he'll play some snaps, and the other three will play more.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at that Chicago Bears roster in front of you there. Right next to the Michigan basketball roster, right? You printed that out. How are your Wolverines looking this year?
Getting to be into November, so I printed out the Michigan basketball schedule and the roster. Hmm. So they've lost Trey Burke, Hardaway, but they're coming back with the big guy inside, and they got some good freshmen. So I think Beeline will be in the hunt for a Big Ten title.
Fair enough. Should be interesting. Looking forward to seeing Syracuse in that ACC, too.
Oh, that's right.
It's going to be
revamped.
Yes, yeah. Duke, North Carolina, Pitt's in there too now. So, all right.
Ty, the Bears are 11-point underdogs. In the last 45 years, the Packers have been favored by double digits 8 times. They won the last 7, and the one they lost was on November 3, 1968, at Lambeau Field. The great Gale Sayers. You've seen Gale on highlight stuff, Tyler.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, little Gale Sayers tidbit, James Starks is a big fan of Gale Sayers, studies film of him, or has in the
really?
Past. Yep.
Awesome. All right, Sayers, a career-high 205 yards against Coach Phil Bengston's Packers, and the Bears won it 13-10. They were a 10.5-point dog. So the Packers going to this one as an 11-point favorite. I guess a lot of reasons, but mostly it's talk about the Bear defense. It's not very good. They're really struggling there. Injuries, okay, now they lost Lance Briggs. But, I mean, he played six games or six and a half games, so you can't blame injuries for what's happened on their defense. They just got old. They lost Urlacher. And inside, Corey Wooten, a five-technique defensive end, really moved inside to replace Henry Melton at three-technique. Mm-hmm. He's 6'6", 280, 275. He's a good athlete, and he tries hard. He's got long arms, but he's getting blown out at the point.
Why did they move him inside?
Because they had nobody else. Collins, their third DT behind Melton and Paella, he got a blown ACL as well. So Paella is a decent starting nose, shoots into a one-gap scheme. That's the way they play it. Wooten's forced to play three-technique. And then you got Landon Cohen, who's with his eighth team, a hustling guy who's an eighth of an inch under 6'1". This is what they have. So they're going to struggle. They're struggling stopping the run, in addition to getting any kind of pass rush, and that's why they're 29th in points.
Okay. What do you see there at linebacker?
No Urlacher and no Briggs. It's not good. You got James, huh?
Urlacher's no good, though.
He slipped the last year, no question. I'm thinking about him for 12 years before that, when he ran the show and was a great, great player. James Anderson, the former Panther, he got cut. He's in his eighth year. He's going to have to play 100% of the snaps. He's kind of just a guy. Jonathan Bostic, a second-round pick. He wasn't even playing. He replaces DJ Williams, a former Bronco who suffered a season-ending injury a while back. This is his second game playing, I think. Bostic's got good speed, but, you know, it's his second game. Man, that's a big thing being across the line from Aaron Rodgers. And you got Kasim Green, a kid from Rutgers, who made unbelievable number of interceptions, forced fumbles, sacks, fumble recoveries. He hasn't ever played. He's a fourth-round pick. He's got a start for Lance Briggs.
Wow. Very old defense looking very young this week.
All right. How can they win the game? They got to get turnovers. Mm-hmm. And you got a turnover machine in Charles Tillman. He's the best at it. He's also playing on a bad knee. You know, I assume he's going to play. He will have had 2 weeks off now. But he's got to get his hands on some balls, tip some stuff. He's got to. Tim Jennings is a real good corner. Mm-hmm. He's 5'8". I don't care. He's really a good player.
He forces turnovers too?
Yes, he does. He gambles, but he's usually right. The safeties, major disappointment. Major right, Chris
Conte. Hey, look at that little pun there.
Not very good, Ty. A second-round pick, two third-round picks, and they're not playing good at all, run or pass. They can be matched up on deep. And they're missing tackles. So that's the defense.
Is this a worse defense than Minnesota?
Yes. Despite those turnovers, I mean, maybe you give the edge to the Bears because of their turnovers. I mean, I think they're fifth in takeaways right now, I believe, with 18. They're plus 7 on the turnover. That's giving them their 4-3 record. I like the Minnesota front 7. They played tough the other night. They just got worn out by a superior quarterback and two really good running backs on an offensive line that was functioning high. I don't know.
Just another example that when your core guys are getting older, you better nail your draft picks, because right now, through the names you said there, we A, don't know what they have, or B, they just haven't worked out. So it'll be interesting. How about on offense? Do they have a shot with Josh McCown?
It's totally turned around now. This you got to give Mark Trestman and Phil Emery a great deal of credit. This offense, as one scout put it, it's probably playing as well as they have in two decades. You think of all those offensive coordinators that couldn't do it. Ron Turner, John Shoup, Mike Martz, there's been a lot more. And now, just in 8-9 months under Mark Trestman, this team is efficient. Emery's helped them solve that offensive line with four new starters. He's done a great job there. They're getting rid of the ball. It's none of that deep drop stuff that Mike Martz just so outmoded, you know. I mean, this Trestman called plays. The plays are getting in quick. There's no screwing around. And Cutler's getting rid of the ball. He's done good things with Cutler. And, all right, so now Cutler gets hurt. Josh McCown. Josh McCown played really good against Washington. 2.5 quarters. He did a great job. He's 34, but he's still a good athlete, Tyler. Mm-hmm. He of the two McCowns, Josh and Luke. Luke is in Denver behind Peyton Manning. Right. Josh is the better athlete, and he always has been, and he's still got wheels. He's got a very, very average arm, and he will throw picks. He's had two starts against Green Bay, one for the Bears. He produced 21 points. That's more than Cutler has produced in nine starts against the Packers. 20 was his high.
That's the thing with Chicago. I mean, Cutler has been notoriously awful against Green Bay. I mean,
Dom Capers has been just owns had him. Yeah, owns him. So, you know, I think McCown can do some things. Now, whether he can outscore, I don't know. But their formula would be get three or four turnovers. And they got the offense. I mean, they got weapons, Tyler. Big weapons, talented weapons, outstanding people. Brandon Marshall, Martellus Bennett, Alshon Jeffrey.
A different Alshon Jeffrey than the one Green Bay saw at the Soldier Field last year. Remember, he had the three offensive pass interferences?
That's right.
He cost his team at very critical moments that game, and now he's been dominant at times this year.
He's learning, and he really is, yeah. He can escape the jam. Brandon Marshall had a hip problem in the offseason. Some scouts think he is just not the same dominant player, but he's still darn good. Martellus Bennett, he doesn't run as good as Finley, but pretty solid blocker, and he's got a huge catching radius. This guy almost had an NBA career, and he's a heck of a player.
Another little nugget for you, Martellus Bennett and JerMichael Finley were AAU teammates in basketball. Right, they were good buddies growing up.
One at Texas, one at A&M.
Well, this would have been before that.
And then they eventually stayed in the state.
Exactly.
Yeah. Earl Bennett's a crafty, cagey slot receiver. Nothing wrong with him.
Albeit an overpaid one, right? They gave him a lot of money a couple years ago.
Did they?
I think so.
Earl Bennett, yeah.
I just remember comparing his contract to Jordy Nelson's, and he's making more than Nelson.
Running back. They got a top 10 running back in Matt Forte. He's smooth. He's Dorsey Levin-ish. Dorsey Levin's-like. He's a heck of a player. He can beat you in the passing game. He's not a very good pass blocker, but the guy can run inside and outside.
They get him touches too, right? That's been a problem at the pass. It seems like sometimes they just don't get him the ball enough, but they kind of know what they have there in him now.
Mark Trestman, he gets it done.
Do you know much about Mark Trestman, his past?
I talked to him quite a bit in the 80s.
Did you?
He was an assistant at Cleveland, various places. It's back in the day when assistant coaches were more willing to help out-of-town writers. That's just the way it went. Unfortunately, it's not quite like that anymore. It's really a shame. Mark Trestman was a really good guy, helpful. I learned a lot from him. Yeah, he's sharp. Now let's look at the O-line. It's been a mess over the years, right, with Webb at tackle and Spencer inside. Lance Lewis was a good player. He got hurt.
The last time Chicago was in Green Bay, remember, it was the Cutler, Jamarcus Webb had the little altercation.
That's right. Was that last year?
Yeah, gave him a little shoulder.
Yeah, on the way off.
Yeah.
All right, so Phil Emery gave a whole bunch of money to Jermon Bushrod from the Saints. He's playing the same way at left tackle as he did for the Saints. He's good. He's not great. He's fine.
Okay.
You got to pay for a left tackle, and it's been good. Slauson is just kind of a guy, but he's probably better than what they were playing with, such as Gabe Kareemi or Spencer. Just not very good players. Garza's been there forever. He's still a naturally strong center. And then Phil Emery drafted Kyle Long in the first and right tackle Jordan Mills in the fifth. Long's been a really good player. Mm-hmm. He hits on the move. He's a fantastic athlete. He's raw because of his inexperience in college, few starts, but he looks like he's got a real, real fine future. And Jordan Mills has been okay. I mean, they've had so much problems at tackle, but Jordan Mills has been okay. I would say he's not quite as good as Don Barkley, but close. That's about what we're talking.
Okay.
Real close there, yeah. So the offense, they're good, Tyler. The Bears' offense is good. It's hard to really say that, you know?
Even with Josh McCown, though, do they have a shot with Josh McCown at the helm, Bob? I can't get past the fact that we have Josh McCown against Aaron Rodgers.
Probably not.
Yeah.
The 11-point spread is probably reflective of the truth.
Yep.
As it almost always is. Hmm. Those odds makers kind of know what they're doing.
Before we forget, executive board, you had the story with the changes there. All right, just enlighten us, educate us. What do these people do, Bob?
I mean, you know, Tyler, I kind of decided to write the story because, I mean, you're in your mid-20s and a generation of fans just don't really know anything about Tom Olenicek, the name Olenicek. You don't know how to pronounce it, right? I mean,
I don't.
And this was just, you know, all right, so Tom Olenicek, 64, a Green Bay attorney, he gets named to a vacancy on the executive committee. And for the young listeners, the Packers are governed by a 45-man board of directors, all right? And of those 45, seven are form the executive committee. President, vice president, secretary, treasurer, three at large. The president, Mark Murphy, okay, he runs the show, and then you got six other guys off that board. Executive committee, I mean, the board only meets quarterly. So that's 45 unwieldy group. And there have been times, certainly over in the history, when they were much more involved than they are now. Okay, they're there, but they form some committees. But the blood and guts of this is the executive committee. I mean, Mark Murphy really deals with these other six members all the time. They meet once a month, but they're on the phone all the time. And that's what this Tom Olenicek. And I'll just mention this. His dad was Dominic Olenicek, Green Bay mayor from 1945 to 55. He was a realtor. And then he got put on the Packer board because he was a successful businessman. And then he was named Packer president in 1958 when the team was at absolute low ebb. 10 losing seasons in a row. They had just opened the new stadium. People were thinking they'd move to Milwaukee or just give up the franchise. It was a mess, you know. Huh. And Olenicek then, after a 1-10-1 season, he led the search committee that eventually led the Packers to Vince Lombardi. Olenicek served 24 years. He won 5 NFL titles. Then it went the other way during the Dan Devine, Phil Bankston, Dan Devine, and Bart Starr years. He eventually retired in 82. He was a very controversial figure all through those rough years. Very stubborn with the press. I wouldn't say he was the most open gentleman in the world, and I'm sure his son would understand that.
Did you guys cross paths then?
Not that much. That was more others on the beat.
Okay.
But, I mean, everybody knew that he ran a very tight, silent ship, you know. And they had just gone downhill, so it was brutal. And his son, one of two sons, another son, Mark, followed in his footsteps as the leading realtor in Green Bay. Olenicek Realty, and Tom went into the law. Yeah. Tom wanted to become Packer president twice when they hired Bob Harlan in 89 and when they hired Mark Murphy in 07. And he was interviewed each time, didn't get the job. Life goes on. He's been on the Packer board since 86, served 27 years. And when there was a vacancy, Mark Murphy called him a week ago. He was flabbergasted, immediately took the job and was voted to the post. So that's it.
All right. So, well, that's fascinating. I mean, did not know all the detail there. Great stuff. What would be a decision or two that he would make?
All this development of the footprint in the several blocks away, what they're going to do with that land down Lombardi Avenue. The executive committee will be involved in that big time. I'm sure that the Badger game here to play LSU in a few years, I mean, that's executive committee signing off on big money for Rodgers and Matthews. They're involved with that all the way. Contracts throughout the building, they're involved in all that. The board would handle Mark Murphy's negotiation on his contract. Everything.
Yeah.
They're involved. Now, the full board is not, but these seven guys are.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes that I just think fans don't realize. And those are kind of the engine that makes it go.
Yeah,
absolutely. Anything else you want to get into before we start taking some questions, Bob?
I don't think so, Tyler. No. Okay. Let's go to the Q&As. Right,
let's get into it. Okay. This one. All right. From Thomas Vandershaft. He always has a good question or two. Does Green Bay's passing game not missing a beat after all the wide receiver injuries make you think twice about giving Randall Cobb big money? Bob.
I haven't even thought once about it, let alone twice. Good question.
It is. Always, we were just talking about this before we went on air, and it seems that we're via email, chats, Twitter, a lot of people kind of looking into the future already, like beyond 2013, which these are big questions that will come up down the road. I'm sure that this hasn't really crossed the mind of Ted Thompson too much right now, but it will at some point. I don't know, probably too soon to say. Yeah. Randall Cobb is so valuable that I don't see anything going on week to week without him would affect too much. I mean, you kind of know what Randall Cobb brings.
Let me mention this, Tyler. You know, when I got on this beat, this team was 800 or 500 or below, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's all you did was look ahead after midseason. I mean, you had to find a quarterback and you looked ahead to the draft and blah, blah, blah. Now when you got a team in a shot, a Super Bowl contender, I can't stand looking ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, these each game is precious. Each season of this caliber is precious. Don't bore me with that stuff. I just don't see it. This is a big season, and these are big games. And
hey, Tommy, don't take it personal.
Thinking. Sorry, Tommy.
Bob talks like that to me all the time. Don't worry, Tommy. All right, Ben Bernstein, he asks, how much of a running back split do you see with Starks and Lacy moving forward? Monday, Mike McCarthy said he wanted to get James Starks more touches than he did. Eddie Lacy had 29 carries. Starks had 7. I'm sure they don't want Eddie Lacy to carry the ball 25 to 30 times a game. They want him fresh by late season, postseason potentially. But you also got to be careful. You don't want to overwork James Starks. I mean, how many injuries has the guy had these last few years? It's kind of a happy medium. I don't really know what that is.
He just had Starks had 11 plays on his first game back. Mm-hmm. I would think he'll get more than that. That was in a 76-snap offensive game, too. Generally, the average is about 62. He'll get more than that.
So Jonathan Franklin probably only touches the ball if one of those guys get hurt at this point.
After the way he performed on kickoff returns, he didn't deserve to get the ball from scrimmage.
You know, I didn't get a chance to talk to him after the game. What was he thinking at the end of the first half there?
No idea. Really lack of poise, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this one from Kent. Jugstad, cannot pronounce his last name. He asked, does Pat ever get to pick the opening music? If she cooks, she should get a say in the music. All right. Oh, there she is in the background. What do you think, Bob? Should we let...
Well, she didn't cook for us tonight, Tyler.
She didn't. We went to Sammy's for some pizza.
And that's Sammy's Pizza on Oneida.
All right.
Any Green Bay...
Sorry, Pat. No music privileges.
Al Crispini's Sammy's Pizza. Al Crispini was a great friend of mine and a tremendous person. Passed away a few years ago.
God rest his soul.
And he's got a great pizza parlor.
Great stuff.
So does Pat get to pick the music? Yeah, I think she does. What do you think?
I think so. That was a great meal last time. I think that's worth a couple weeks in music.
But can she beat Radiohead and Van Morrison?
Pat, what would you go with? Silence.
She's out of earshot.
She's out of earshot. Okay.
She's not listening to this drivel.
Well, you did tell her to keep it to a dull roar, before we went on.
Yeah.
So, Coach Plyo guy asks, are you surprised that Don Barkley gets every snap at right tackle?
I'm not. He's been healthy. He's playing at an adequate level. You don't like to alternate ever in the O-line. That used to be done here. Forrest Gregg would do some of that with guys like Alan Weingrad and Keith Euchre and some guards. That used to go on. Never real smart. You need cohesion. Do you see Newhouse getting snaps?
No, I mean, I don't think Don Barkley's played that bad. I mean, he's struggled at times early in games. Washington, Baltimore, and I think here last week, a play or two. But it seems like he figures it out, and he gets better as the game goes along. And it's one of those things where I don't think you – realize how good you have it at tackle until it's gone. I mean, you can think of some dark days on the edge there with some guys.
Yeah.
Things are going pretty well on offense. I think that would be getting a little too cute there. Davey W. at Davey Pinstripes asks, how does the team make roster space for Jarrell Worthy, Derek Sherrod, and Sean Richardson? Well, talking to Worthy recently, he kind of gets it health-wise. He's not completely there, but I think that even if he was, they're pretty well stocked on the defensive line. They don't necessarily need to rush Jarrell Worthy back at this point in time, and I think that it's kind of a roster thing as much as it is a knee thing. I mean, is that the vibe you get too, Bob?
Unless there's an injury, he'll be back next year.
Right. Derek Sherrod, he's been in pads. They're getting a long look at him now. He's been practicing for a couple weeks. We just talked about Don Barclay and Marshall Newhouse and the situation on the O-line. Do you make room for Derek Sherrod?
In 2011, when he was coming off the bench, starting to alternate with Newhouse late in the year, Newhouse was a better player than Sherrod.
He was.
And then Newhouse played all last year, and poor Derek couldn't play at all. And I don't know. I mean, he's got to get ahead of Newhouse before he gets on the field. And do you want to? It seems like he's going to make a return next year as well.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I don't see how there's room unless there's an injury. I mean, injuries can happen, but right now.
Yeah.
Not looking like it. Sean Richardson, though, might be a different case where they know what they have in John McMillan. What, 500-plus snaps last year. The struggles in the opener this year at Baltimore. He's a third safety. They already replaced him in dime. Sean Richardson maybe could be something different. Tall, athletic safety. But they haven't really seen him yet either. I guess they don't know if he is a player because he hasn't played at all. So what would you do there?
2014.
All of them.
You don't want to get rid of Banjo? Why cut McMillan? I mean, Sean hasn't played in so long, you know. At least McMillan can run down there. McMillan's not that bad. I mean, you know, like you say, 500 snaps. He's not that bad of a player. The guy can run. He's had some bad plays, granted, but he's all right on special teams, and he's not a bad young player.
Yeah, I like him, too. And Dom Capers was saying that he can do some different things that other guys can't do. He's still a player that if you need somebody in the box for whatever reason, he'll hit. I mean, we know he'll hit, and he might not always wrap up the way they want, mm-hmm. but he's a willing hitter, and plays with attitude. So yep. I guess in general you want those kind of guys around, and you don't know what you have in Richardson, even if he is cleared.
No. He played 15 snaps from scrimmage, I believe, last year.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he – I don't know. I can see both sides, but that'll be tough. Okay, let's get to a couple more here. Jack Shearer. I mispronounced that. Sorry, Jack. He asks, how do you compare David Bakhtiari's performance so far versus Clifton and Tauscher in 2000?
I'd have to go back and read my end-of-season grades on those two guys. I'm not going to just sit here and make stuff
up. But Bakhtiari's playing really well right now, correct? I mean, he's played against some tough hazard. Terrell Suggs, Jared Allen. Week after week, he's had some pretty tough matchups. And overall, has he exceeded your expectations? Has he lived up? Has he not lived up, Bob? You were all over that storyline when Bulaga went down.
Yeah, I think he has. I believe he's had one bad game this year. Again, I can't quite remember. Maybe it was the Baltimore game, but I'm not sure. Sure, he's exceeded expectations. He was viewed as a guy who was kind of a finesse zone blocking, probably a guard. Quite a few scouts told me that, and he's certainly a lot more than that.
All right, one more. Zach Rapport, he asks.
Let me read it, Tyler. Tyler, how do you account for A.J. Hawk's more notable play lately? He squirted into the backfield again a few times at the HHH.
Well, I think he's been, by and large, the same player for a while. He's been around 8 years. He's here for a reason. As we've talked about, they trust him with the defense. He's been durable. He's only missed a couple games his whole career. But this year, on some of those blitzes, he's getting into the backfield. He's got some sacks. He's been playing a little bit more on passing downs with Brad Jones out. I guess he's just out there a little bit more. I don't know. I feel like that the way the Packers would view this is that A.J. Hawk has always been a durable, reliable player that they count on to get everybody in the right position, that they really do view as the brains of the defense. Just now, maybe he's getting a little more recognition. He was asked today if this is his best season, and he kind of shrugs, and he kind of goes about his business. So I don't know if the Packers necessarily see a big difference in A.J. Hawk's play, but it seems like he is in the backfield more.
He's a real modest guy, isn't he? That's very impressive.
He is, and I'll say, you know, a lot of players would say that, have that kind of response, but with A.J. Hawk, it does seem pretty genuine with him that this he really doesn't seek attention. I mean, we don't really see him around the locker room a ton. I mean, when he has injuries, he doesn't talk about them. He said that he kind of views that as, you know, a lack of manliness, toughness, not being a pro if you are talking about your injuries in the public. I mean, he's gone through some things that people don't know about. some serious injuries that people don't know about. So I think that now he's just kind of maybe getting a little credit for it because the team's winning and the defense is stopping people. All right, Bob, I think that's going to do it for us. Should we? Do you want to go to a little round ball rock, or do you want to go back to Van Morrison?
You can do your round ball rock when it's your turn. I want Van Wild.
Was I leapfrogged by Pat tonight? Or I might have been.
Maybe.
Okay.
We're going back next week. 42 years.
42 years, wow.
This is one heck of a song.
It is. It is a good song.
Mr. Van Morrison.
Thanks, guys.